In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
It's Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours. I am getting Josh Knapp online with me here in a moment, and we will get going. I'm trying to get Dave Brenner on here as well, so we will go ahead and do that and hopefully get the scheduled guest, at least, on the show here. If you are listening live, you can follow us on Twitter. We are at EMS Safe over on Twitter.
Hello.
Or you can follow us on Facebook at EMS Office Hours. And I think Josh is now with us.
I am.
And I hear pots and pans rattling in the background.
Did you hear that before?
Of course. I have super hearing.
Considering I had no microphone, that's very super hearing.
Yeah, that's what I do. The magic of me. So I was just mentioning our Twitter handle, Josh, and the Facebook page to go ahead and follow if people are interested in that. Of course, I'm launching the chat room right now, actually, as we speak, so we can go ahead and get that going as well. And this way, anybody listening that wants to go ahead and join us live in the chat room, and they can comment or chat on the things that we are discussing live during the show. So we're going to get that going right now. What else do I want to mention?
We seem to have a little feedback going there.
Yeah, I'm fine on my end. Why do we have feedback?
Nope. I think we're okay.
Yeah. So. What else are we talking about today? Well, I do want to go ahead. I made this post, Josh, on my Facebook page. I want to kind of bring it up real quick before we get too much into the show itself. Talking about a sign at sort of pharmacy, and the sign said, due to HIPAA laws and security, please refrain from using your cell phone while online at the pharmacy register.
And that sounds like another misunderstanding of the HIPAA laws.
Yeah, it sounds like a misunderstanding of the HIPAA law, or they're using that as a way to sort of get the general public to not use their cell phone while they're online. You know, because they don't like the fact that people are distracted when they're picking up their prescriptions or when they're, you know, paying for stuff at the register. That's always interesting. You know, people don't understand what the HIPAA law is, and then.
Jim, you want to check the cord to your mic because you're coming in and out, and I'm not moving, so it's not me this time.
Can you hear me now? What about now?
You blanked out for a minute. You have heavy feedback.
I haven't changed anything to what normally goes on.
Is Dave around?
I don't know. I tried getting him in, and I have not heard as of yet.
All righty. I thought, okay, I'm a little confused this week. Because I thought I missed last week.
Correct. He missed last week and the week before.
And you're here.
The week before, we did our live show, as usual. And then last week was the second half of the live show that we did.
All right.
So we are back to the live show today.
Well, I have to say, it's been a crazy week for me. I had the death of my uncle and all the other stuff going on, so excuse me, catching up here online live with you.
Right. Yeah. That's everyone here.
So everybody can hear our business.
They want to hear your problems.
Hey, you know, some people might care.
Yeah, I don't think so. So anyway, so that was my deal there. I'm going to try to bring Dave in again, Josh. See if we can get him in here. For some reason, the call keeps dropping on Dave. I'm not sure if he's having Skype problems or it might just be Skype in general, so who knows. We'll give Dave another try. So that is the my little sort of sidebar there.
So were you on, or you just saw the sign when you walked into the...
No, I was online beginning the prescription. I saw it. I actually took a picture of it with my phone. And I took the picture of my phone, and the pharmacy lady kind of looked at me like, what are you doing? You know, but then the picture came out kind of crappy. So.
What are you doing? That's a HIPAA violation.
Yeah, I know.
I'm making a post here. Getting the word out, we're online right now.
What's that?
Getting the word out that we're online live right now.
Yeah, I'm hearing a little feedback on your end now, but it's all right.
Yeah, there's something I heard from the get-go, but I don't think it's me.
I don't know.
You never know.
I don't know. So, anyway, so today's...
We have technical issues sometimes.
Today's topic, after we're done bitching about the microphone, which I'm sure all listeners want to hear, is how you're listening to feedback on your end. And
how you're listening to feedback on your end?
Yeah, they want to hear all your bullshit, you know, so now that everybody's done listening to you talk about feedback and, you know, interrupting the overall outline of the show, maybe we can recaptivate some of the listeners into what's going on tonight. I guess Dave is not going to be here, FYI, because I try to get out the woman. He's not done.
I will text him. He probably got confused the same way I've been confused. Maybe we're actually not supposed to be here tonight, and it's actually you this time.
No, you're supposed to be here.
Oh, okay. All right. Spoken like a true boss.
Yeah.
Can't be my mistake. Has to be yours.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Why exactly did you call 911? It's your call.
So, one of the things that I kind of wanted to sort of talk about today is this, and I started thinking about this, I think we've touched on this before in the past a little bit too, Josh, when we talk about how we speak in EMS. And it's not necessarily, I don't think, unique to EMS where we have like our own internal language that we speak to each other and the lingo that we use, you know, to each other.
Well, we have that, but we're not focusing on that tonight.
Well, we have that language, and it's not that it's unique to EMS. I think every industry sort of has its own way of speaking to each other when you're working on the job. And I was just thinking, like, when you sort of sit down and you're talking to somebody that's not in EMS and you're trying to kind of convey a message to them about how your day went, about a call you did, about your expectations, you know, in the profession, you know, how it's hard to sort of get that across because you not only don't people really understand how work goes on,
in EMS, and that's, you know, what we do as providers, really. You know, that's what the whole problem of us being called ambulance drivers and all that, because that's all people sometimes think that we do, is sort of lost on people outside of, you know, EMS.
Are you speaking a little bit? Were you involved? Have you been involved online in some of the discussions about the Staten Island job?
No, we're going to talk about that later on the second half of the show. I thought we'd be trying to cover that a little bit. And that kind of folds into a little bit, I guess, what we're talking about now as far as, you know, the language of EMS, you know, in the show notes, you know, I put down asking if you've ever tried talking to somebody outside of EMS about a call you had, the way that you do things at work, or even explaining how a treatment that we do works, a protocol that we use works. And about a lot of times, you know, these people that are outside of EMS, they get confused, they don't understand. You know, it gets to be too much of an effort for them to sort of comprehend what we're talking about, and they end up just not really caring, you know.
We get confused.
Yeah.
Let's be fair here.
No? The other thing, too, is also that you have to be careful when you're describing some of the things that we do, because sometimes you end up sort of coming off of maybe kind of uncaring or cold about the call you did because you're a frustration you had about the call. You know what I mean? And people can look at you like, oh my God, what are you? You're on the ambulance. You're taking care of people. And you've got that attitude, or you've got sort of an uncaring outlook on things. You know what I mean? So you have to sort of, when you're talking about a call and what you're doing as a provider, in some ways you have to kind of tailor the conversation you're having with that person that's not in EMS. You've got to sort of tailor your conversation, to them so that they can understand and either get what you're trying to tell them or maybe even sympathize with what it is that you're trying to say to them. Does that make sense, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay, so
I want you to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not expanding on it, but what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring this caller inside here we have, and see if we can get some other input on a lovely conversation. Hello, you are live with EMS Office Hours.
Hey, Jim, this is Donald. How are you?
Hey, Donald, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you taking my call. Let me join in.
Not a problem. Are you in your car?
I am. I'm driving driving home from work, actually. Can y'all hear me fine?
I can actually hear you pretty good. Actually, no problems with the beat. Sometimes you get the air conditioning going or the outside sort of tires, you know, rubbing, so you sound pretty good.
Yeah.
So
if it gets loud, just let me know, yeah.
Yeah, no, you sound pretty good, actually.
All right, good.
Josh has his air conditioner on, getting bad.
I can turn that down in the background. I'm trying to adjust my mic volume, too.
Oh.
So we're having a little problem.
I gotcha. So, Donald, just your take, I'm wondering, do you ever kind of feel that sort of... that kind of feedback when you tell somebody a story about something you did on the ambulance... or a call you had from this United EMS, you know, trying to get them to sort of understand or sympathize with what you're trying to tell them without kind of coming off as almost like an asshole because you're either frustrated with the call or they're not really getting it, what you're trying to tell them?
Yeah, well, you know, and I think it depends on the story, because I think there's a lot of times that, I have an incredible amount of empathy for my patients. I mean, I definitely try to look at things from their perspective, whether it be, you know, your homeless patient with an ETOH of 300 or, you know, some six-figure income lady that, you know, whatever. But anyway, so I do try to look at it from their perspective. But when I'm repeating the stories to other people, a lot of times I'm repeating stuff that was happening medically and pathophysiologically. And, you know, and so I'll get excited about, you know, me giving details on, for whatever reason, their heart rate was slow, and I was really trying to figure out, and I was really afraid that this was going to happen. And people are listening to what I'm saying, and just they're taking it like, wow, Donald's talking about the way this lady's, or this guy's heart rate is extremely low, and he's talking about it very nonchalantly, and my God, he must not care. Well, you know, just because I'm leaving out details at times on how, no, trust me, there's plenty of times I was holding the lady's hand or holding, you know, or talking to the guy and, you know, comforting him and telling him what I was doing. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes it might be my fault for leaving out details, but, you know, there's also the frustrating calls that, you know, that you share, but I think that sometimes gives a, you know, gives a little bit of insight to, you know, to the general public. I mean, people, you know, I mean, y'all know this, people are consistently blown away when we say, oh, yeah, I picked up a patient today whose right toe hurt, and it's also been hurting for 4 months. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's like sometimes it's almost you feel like it's necessary to share those stories just to maybe get a little empathy from other people, I guess.
Right, you want to sort of get make them feel sorry for you and having to go, you know, go do those types of calls. You know, yeah. People, it's very easy to sort of explain to somebody, oh, I had a person in cardiac arrest, and I did CPR, and we got pulses back, and I saved their life. Okay, well, that's pretty kind of easy for someone not in EMS to sort of grasp, you know. But like you said, if you start trying to talk about some of the background of what's happening with the patient, you can either sound, like you said, maybe nonchalant about it, or maybe you're leaving out details because you don't want to get too technical with people that are not in EMS, you know, because they look at you like, you know, why would I care about, you know, this? Or when you start saying, you know, abbreviations of things or sort of trying to cut corners because you're kind of talking the way you would talk to another EMS provider, that it doesn't hold as much weight for somebody not in.
Well, isn't there another technicality that we're really talking about here? It's sympathy versus empathy. I think that a lot of, you know, first of all, why do we tell the stories of potential abuse of the system? You know, the person with the sore foot for 8 weeks. You know, we tell them to elicit a level of, hey, you know, you don't know how tough my job is. And, you know, because otherwise they're pretty mundane, not worth even, you know, they're barely worth documenting, much less worth telling somebody afterwards. But
I think sometimes, though, too, I find myself sometimes withholding those types of calls from people that aren't in EMS because I don't want to minimize my job. I don't want it to sound like, oh, my God, this guy's just, you know, taking people to the hospital that don't even need an ambulance. They don't need,
That's my point, is that we generally, you know, why do we even tell those stories? You know, we certainly don't share them in the crew room unless they're, you know, a one-upsmanship. Oh, I just transported somebody with a paper cut today. Oh, really? I transported somebody and they had an ear, you know, like, you know, a pimple on the earlobe.
I love one-upping, though.
Yeah.
I love one-upping.
Well, you know.
That's what I live for.
Hey, listen, I just try to one-up, you know, whenever I can one-up.
Well, I'm going to one-up you. No, you know, I have actually described to people before, you know, because, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, Jim, oh, you know, you're a paramedic. How exciting a job is that? And I've even described to people, and once again, just like you said, Jim, I'm not trying to downplay what we do, obviously, by any means. This what I'm about to say technically could even be applicable to an ER. But I've even said that, you know, if you really want to get technical, 80 to 82, 85% of what we do is essentially family practice care, you know, and then about 10% would be considered urgent care, you know, and then like 5% is actual, like, emergent, you know, priority twos and ones. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, and it's, but once again,
you can actually, I mean, I've never heard it put that way as far as, like you said, that family practice sort of element of it, of that 85% even, you know, that you're talking about. You know,
well,
what
do we normally say about the job? You know, 99% boredom spiked by 1% of sheer terror.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, but I think it's true though, and I think when you're telling this, sometimes I think when we tell the stories as well, we end up talking about that 85% that Donald's mentioning, because that is the bulk of what we're doing, and you know, you want to make it sound like, yeah, I'm doing my job and this is the job that I'm doing. But I really shouldn't be doing that 85%. I should be doing more of that, the other 15%, you know, more of the urgent care type stuff, more of that emergency type, you know, calls. You know, but the reality of it is that we do take care of that 85% more. So when we're telling these stories and we're giving the you know, our input and our sort of flair on it, you know, those are stories we're telling. And I think that sometimes when you start, you can get people that get a little bitter about having to do that type of, you know, those types of calls, those non-emergent calls, and then we run into the issue of people sort of looking at us like, well, you know, you don't like doing your job. You hate your job.
Well,
what are you doing your job?
That's two separate things, isn't it? You're talking about burnout. And then you're talking about, you know, how other people perceive our job and how we communicate what our job is. But I think when you started this conversation out, Jim, you were really more speaking to how we communicate with our patients, no?
No, well, not really our patients, but I'm thinking more like how we communicate to our friends and family or to people. Let's say you meet somebody that doesn't know what you do and they say, hey, what do you do for a living? You say, well, I'm a paramedic. And then they try to kind of get some more information out of you as to, you know, what it is that you do. And you try to you know, give them examples of the type of work that you do to sort of, I guess, get them on your side. And then you end up almost speaking to them in a language that they don't get, you know. Or when you try to sort of format the story or format that language in a way that they can understand, you can come across as minimizing your job or come across as somebody who's bitter about the job and or cold and uncaring, and then they're looking at you like, oh my God, this guy's got people's lives in his hands and he's got this sort of attitude of you know, being cold about these patients. You know, they called for help. Same, just help them.
Hello, can you hear me?
I got you. I hear you, Donald.
Okay. You know, as far as, like, using medical terminology, I think my wife would probably say that the only thing more annoying than eating dinner with me after I had an exciting day at work is if she was eating dinner with me and two or three other friends in medicine. Like, she cannot stand when me and my dad, we just go off talking about, my dad does anesthesia, so he and I will be talking about all these different things with patients, and my poor wife, she's sitting back and she's like, I have no idea what the hell y'all are talking about. Nor am I caring right now. But, yeah, I mean, but, you know, once again, like, we all know that there's so much of a lack of awareness of our field of work. So I really do try, if people ask me any question at all, whether it be tell me a cool story or what is it that you do, you know, I try to give them as much layman kind of, you know, details and layman's terms as possible. I had jury duty this past week, and a guy on the jury asked me what I did, and I said I was a paramedic. He said, quote, so you're just like basically like a paid firefighter, right? That's pretty cool.
that's so cool.
Is that not the best response I've ever heard? And, you know, so...
No, let me demonstrate what I do.
You know, so it's good to at least be able to, you know, to educate through the story. But, yeah, I mean, I think depending on the person, you can definitely have somebody think that you have no sympathy whatsoever, you know, things like that.
You know, we all view the world through our own lens, our frame of reference. So whenever we use language, we are, you know, converting that language into experiences that we can relate to. So sometimes it's sort of difficult to communicate to somebody who's never had that experience. You know, I hate to use this example, but you know, I've heard it before. It's like explaining color to a blind person.
Yeah.
So when you have somebody, you know, I was at a lunch the other day, and I met this guy, and he was a volunteer firefighter from the adjoining state that I live in. And, you know, he was, like, trying to relate, you know, the two or three fire calls that he does a week to, you know, my life as a,
yeah.
as a city paramedic.
Right, doing 8 calls a shift, and he's trying to tell you how, you know, how equal.
Yeah, and yeah. How, you know, oh, gee whiz, it's been a busy summer for fires. And I'm like, a lot of barbecues?
Well, you know, a lot of times even firefighters don't always get what we do either, unless they are in a system where they're working as first responders as well.
Right. You don't go to a call with 6 other guys? What?
Yeah.
What's the problem with lifting the patient off the floor? Well, when they're 400 pounds and you have a partner who is, you know, 105 pounds soaking wet, it could be a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, where I work now, Josh, I mean, we get fire on just about every call, unless it's, you know, a call where there's already healthcare people on the scene. You know, so we get first responders on every call, and it does make a difference, you know.
Oh, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I wonder how they pay for that.
You do have them there for, you know, for just about, you know, for lifting, helping you lift equipment, to taking, making, you know, taking blood pressures and all that stuff. But the main thing is they're there, and they're making that early patient contact, you know, before we do. And it's funny that I was actually on a call about a week ago where the patient was like, you know, oh, yeah, the firemen always get here first, and then the ambulance comes second. You know, if we, almost like there's attitude, yeah, the firemen get there first, and if the ambulance is needed, they come second.
Do you ever get canceled by fire?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely
do. So they do serve a purpose.
Yeah, they'll cancel.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, if there's an issue with it, you know. But in areas where you don't get a lot of that, where you do, where you know, a lot of times the firefighters are just, they're volunteer, I don't think just volunteers, and God knows what happened if I said that, but when they're volunteers, they don't really grasp, you know, the what it is that we do, you know, because when you get there, they leave. They're not there for the entire event that we're, you know, we're dealing with. You know, I guess you know, it's sort of hard, I think, to translate what we do to people that aren't in EMS. And I think we talked about this, Josh, on the show before about how education and educating the public is an important aspect of what EMS should be doing, and it's just not done enough or done well enough to let the public know what it is that we actually do. So that when you talk to somebody who is not in EMS, I mean, I'd say at least 90% of the time, they don't have a clue what it is that we do. You know, because it's not like you've got this big thing like with nursing, that you've got this big, you know, union and media power
well,
behind them.
In history,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I always joke around and say, we don't have a Florence Nightingale. You know, like, that's the very first page of any and all nursing fundamentals book on the very first semester of all nursing school. It's about Florence Nightingale, this, you know, old nurse and yada, yada, yada. You know, and our Florence Nightingale was a hippie in the 70s throwing a body into the back of a hearse and then driving an ER. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we're clinging,
yeah, I mean,
we're
we don't,
clinging to Johnny and Roy is our history.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
You know, listen, guys.
Our history.
Whenever we start to turn to bitching about, you know, the establishment of other practices, I mean, you know, I love to joke about fire being 200 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. And even the fire guys I know, that's where I learned that comment. But, you know, nursing has been around for how many years? Fire's been around for how many years? we're the new guys on the block. You know, we really are. So we have to, you know, even though things move faster now than they ever did and there's more establishment of protocols and practices, we still have to keep that in mind in terms of, you know, political leverage and, you know, where we stand within the community and the perceptions.
But my problem, though, Josh, is that, you know what, since I've been in EMS, I've heard that argument of, well, we're a young profession. I've been in EMS over 20 years, and not much has really changed when it comes to this effort of educating the public and getting that perception of what we do and how we do things and what we're capable of out to the general public.
And there's probably a couple of real good reasons why that is. You know,
money.
You know, look, things changed in around 1980, 1981. You know, when the States Act put EMS from the central government. Or national scene into the state scene. You know, then we became the real bastard redheaded shoeless stepchildren of the emergency management system, and nobody wanted to pay for us. You know, who you know, all of a sudden we were a cost. People didn't even know how to bill for what we did. And you know, we already had two non-billable services in fire and police. And at least the police had a revenue stream with fines and tickets. So, you know,
I'm trying to bill for, you know, you hear some places
and that's fire, just started
to bill for going to car accidents, mm-hmm. Overhaul and for doing things like flooded basements and things like that. They try to bill. Some areas, the fire departments are trying to bill for that now.
And that's new. But, you know, we've been dealing with this for, you know, 35 years where we were sort of starting. We were a fledgling industry. And all of a sudden we have, you know, the cord cut and we're left to the wolves.
Yeah.
You know, so the public perception and who took us over. In 90% of the areas, we were taken over because I would say, 20% of EMS actually run independent in this country? Now, I granted that's pulling a number straight out of my ass.
I could tell you for sure.
And if Kim were on the line, he'd show me three white papers to show exactly what the count was. But Tim's not here. Dave's not here right now. Dave said he's coming in, by the way. He texted me. He's coming
in. All right. Bring him in a sec.
But, you know, so I'm going to pull that number out of my ass. What feels good here is about 20% of EMS runs independently. And out of the 80% that runs under some other organization, I'd say, 5% run by police departments and 75%? So we're dealing easily with three-quarters of our community across this country is already takes the identity of the fire service. So people don't differentiate. You know, call EMS, call fire, gets EMS. Call EMS, gets fire. They're undifferentiated, you know?
Yeah.
And in
yeah.
some places, they run their systems where they are completely not different. You either run on the fire truck so many days a week, and then you run the bus so many days a week.
Right, depending upon what type of system you're in. I work in areas like that where the firemen would, they had the ambulance and the firefighters would rotate every 6 months off of the ambulance,
mm-hmm.
you know, as part of that job. So, I mean, every system's a little different than where you work. In some places are 100% fire-based, you know, systems as well. So, talking about perception. I want to try to move on to the next topic, Josh. I want to go ahead and bring Dave in for that.
So that's the end of part one of this live episode. Next week, we're going to have the second half of the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about the video and issue going on from a New York City encounter between New York City EMS and police department. And a patient ended up dying because of what did or did not happen. So we'll talk about that next week. So we'll see you then. Until next week, as always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. If you have any comments, concerns, or suggestions, contact me. It's contact@emsofficehours.com. And again, until next week, as always, stay safe.